The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
We're beginning now with the ninth step of Anapanasati. Mindfulness of breathing in and mindfulness of breathing out. And the ninth step really builds on what was earlier. Some teachers who teach Anapanasati, this practice of 16 steps, will insist that you should always begin with step one and systematically work your way through all the steps as far as you've gone so far, you know. And there's some advantages to that. Some people's minds really like having order and having a real clear, definitive steps. The mind gets organized, it gets focused, it gets concentrated, knowing what it's doing step by step. Other people find that it ties them in knots to do that. It kind of trip over themselves, it's too much trying, too much expectation. And some people find that it's good to be familiar with all the steps. And then as we sit and meditate, discover where we are, where the salient step is. And sometimes we can start on step five or start on step, you know, even step eight or even step nine, any of these steps, because we sit down and that's what's kind of available in a kind of way. And sometimes we move through up and down in the course of a meditation. So these steps can be done linearly for those who find this beneficial, and they can be more a resource for those people who want to track themselves and understand kind of the domain, the territory of what's happening in their meditation at any one time, what the emphasis is. But we get to the ninth step, and one way of appreciating this, though, is that one way or the other, it's helpful that the earlier steps have been familiar, been developed in some degree. And that's because the more we're grounded in our body and the body is relaxed, the more we begin opening up in a holistic way to our experience. And we begin kind of working through some of the knots, some of the entanglements and tightnesses and tensions that we have. And then to go to the second tetrad, 5 to 8, is to begin to sensing the emotional tone of the body. And if you're quite relaxed and focused, it's a contentment and well-being. And then with that, it's easier to begin trusting it's okay to relax the mental activity. We don't have to be so actively involved in fixing, solving, remembering, planning, criticizing, whatever the mind is doing. And the activity of the mind can begin to rest. And this also, this resting, this releasing, making the mental activity calmer, continues this process of becoming more holistic, being more inclusive, more open to our experience. And then based on that, the experience of the mind becomes easier to experience. So step nine is breathing in, one experiences the mind. Breathing out, one experiences the mind. And I love this word experience, the Pali word could be translated as to feel the mind, feel feel the mind. And so it's not thinking about the mind, it's not having ideas about the mind, but it's something that is more holistic, more broad, and using a kind of the range of sensory apparatus we have to take in our inner life. But the mind is not the details of the inner life, not the particular activities. As I've said, the mind is just a sum total of the mental activities, but it's the way that we can somehow take in the totality of that. Whatever way our mind, and I want to emphasize our mind, your mind, experiences the mood, the mental state, the overall configuration or the kind of balance of it all. That's what we call mind. And I say that because there's a lot of people who would like to have the mind be something in particular. to define it, to know what the mind is. And I don't think that that's really the emphasis in this Buddhist practice, is to know in some abstract way what the mind is. And that's a topic for some other occasion, some other purpose than meditation. In meditation, we're only interested in how each of us experiences our mind. And for some people, the word heart is a better translation for citta, C-I-T-T-A. Some people even translate it as heart-mind. And the state of the heart, the state of the mind, the quality of our inner life. It's the mood, the atmosphere. It's kind of the sum total of how all this works. And sometimes there's a predominant mood of the mind. So the predominant mood can be one of desire or lust or strong wanting. And everything is kind of seen through the filter of the strong wanting. And there's almost like the mind has a force, overall force, like, give me that. It's quite something. We have a cat at home, and I kind of delight somehow and amazed to see the cat definitely has desires. And it seems like everything, the whole catness, is focused on getting what it wants. And it's clear that the desire is there. And so the mood of desire, this disposition, maybe mind is kind of like the overall disposition that we have. And sometimes it's not desire. You can feel the difference between a general mood characterized by desire and one which is not. Sometimes it's aversion, hostility, ill will. And that's kind of, you can kind of see it sometimes in people that there's like almost a cloud of anger or hostility around them. And, you know, that atmosphere, I'm sure, is being experienced or could be experienced in the inside as well. Or there can be the absence of ill will. There could be love. And then there can be confusion that characterizes it all. And the mind is, you know, jumping around, not knowing what it wants to do and doesn't understand. Kind of a lost feeling. That's a kind of a general tone of the mind. Or the absence of confusion. Maybe there's clarity, wisdom. The overall mood of the mind, mind state, can be one of distractibility, jumping around, scatteredness. Or it could be one of being present and undistracted. And then one of the great ones that the tradition talks about is one can know the mind as being expansive or large, or one can know the mind as not being expansive, not being large. And this points to how as we develop this mindfulness and as we develop a reflexive awareness of awareness itself, of the mind itself, that seems to change the mind. That seems to change the kind of, it's harder than to focus on only the things that we're thinking about or things we're aware of. Something begins happening when we're aware of awareness, aware of the mind that knows, or aware of the mind state. It's kind of like if someone points out to you how dirty the windshield is in a car, then now you drive and you're aware of the windshield. You're not focusing on it, but you can't not see it anymore. So to become aware of the mind changes the mind. Because the mind is not a physical thing. The mind is one way of understanding it's kind of the sum total of the mental activities that are operating. And one of the key mental activities is the knowing of itself. If the mind is known, if we bring attention to the mind, and the attention is not for or against, the attention is not with expectations, with demands, with criticism, it's just kind of a relaxed, equanimous, allowing awareness of the mind. That's a mental activity in itself that then feeds back into the formation of the mind as a whole. And so we're shaping our mind all the time. Maybe the brain doesn't change that much. The mind is very flexible. The Buddha emphasized the mind is very, very changeable. And it changes with all our moods and activities and what's going on. And so mindfulness itself, meditation itself, does have an effect on how we experience the mind. And as we, and here the instructions are, know the mind, or experience the mind, breathing in and breathing out. As we do that, because everything we do has with the mind has an, feeds back onto shaping the mind, the experience of the mind we have. And so now we're in this kind of, can start being in this kind of loop, this kind of cycle, this kind of where as the meditation deepens, we're bringing more and more equanimity, more and more openness, more and more receptivity to whatever our experience is, including that of the mind, and that has creates some of the brings those qualities to the mind itself. So one of the reasons why in meditation practice we're trying to develop an equanimous mindfulness that's not for or against experience, it's good in and of itself, but as that gets stronger, it feeds back to reshape or reform the disposition of the mind, the quality of the mind, the state of the mind. So the mind itself begins feeling more receptive, soft, expansive, and all kinds of wonderful things we'll talk more about. So it might be that it's difficult to some of you to follow what I'm saying, but maybe you think about it as mood, your mood that you're in, or the feeling tone, the emotional tone of your inner life, of your mind, your heart, and you can certainly be aware of it any time at all, but to be aware of it after having meditated for some time, for example, more or less the first 8 steps, kind of prepares the ground for mindfulness of the mind to have this wonderful feedback loop to continue to condition or open the mind in a more deeper and deeper way that will allow for concentration to develop. So I'll talk more about this mind thing over the next couple of days. So in the meantime, what you might do is as you go about some of your daily tasks, maybe some of the common things you do, something that you maybe do regularly through the day, maybe washing up or cooking or driving or just going for, you know, whatever you do, why don't you start noticing the mood with which you do it? And then really know the mood. Don't just check it off, oh, you know, I'm annoyed at the exercise. And don't just check it off. Really experience the mood. Take time to, and one way to make sure you give enough time to experience the mood is to breathe with the mood. Take time, just breathe with it for a while and get to know it. And start recognizing your mood. And start recognizing also how your mood shifts as it is known, as you experience it, as you breathe with it. And in daily life, as you go through the day, don't overlook the windshield by looking through it to what's on the other side. So, thank you all very much, and I'll say it a few times. So, this week we're meeting at 7 o'clock, and then next week we'll meet. Next Monday we'll start again at 6:45 for that week, and because I'll be on retreat again. And so it works really well connecting the two for the retreat practice and what we're doing here on YouTube. So thank you very, very much, and I look forward to tomorrow.